You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman, as always, I'm the co-host of this wonderful podcast. And on today's show, we're continuing our player review series, and I'm going to break down TJ Warren's remarkable 2019-20 season. If you haven't checked these out already, this is now the sixth installment of this player review series. We'll go through pretty much all 15 main guys, and then some bench players as well, or some, you know, back bench. It's basically 15 of these shows. So far, I've done shows on Justin Holiday and Aaron Holiday, and Tony has done shows on Goga, Jeremy Lamb, and Doug McDermott. He just did Jeremy Lamb, I believe, for yesterday's show. So check those out if you haven't listened to this kind of format before. But the way I'm doing these podcasts, at least, is pretty simple. We're going to start with kind of TJ Warren's stats, what he did this year, just on the numbers, interesting numbers I can throw out there. And then we'll talk about some of his highlights, lowlights, and what he did this season that sort of took him to another level. And then we'll end with the lingering questions. What are the biggest questions with TJ Warren? I have three right now and might come up with a fourth one while I'm recording this. But we start with TJ Warren's stats, which I think are remarkable, frankly. He averaged 19.8 points per game on 4.2 rebounds and 1.5 assists. And that includes a 53.6% field goal percentage, a 40% three-point percentage, and an effective field goal percentage of 58%. Also was 82% from the line. He basically turned a three-point shooter to becoming a for real one, doing back-to-back seasons. He makes his money by being a really efficient inside three feet shooter, right? He shot 76% inside 3 feet around the rim, and basically he was above 45% on all parts of the floor. I mean, that's how a guy like Warren, who is more of a traditional player who takes a lot more twos, becomes a borderline all-star. And honestly, if we were doing the full season where you count the bubble and he probably would have, you know, he's probably one of the best, I don't know, 12 to 15 guys in the East this season. His season has been breaking down into like three different stats, right? So you have his bubble stats where he had six games, he averaged 24.5 points on 6.3 rebounds on just an unreal shooting of like 58, 53, 89 splits. I mean, that's just not realistic. But that one, his playoff stats, which were 20 points per game, 6.3 rebounds, 3 assists, 2.3 steals on a 47-37, and a perfect from the free throw line. Didn't take that many free throws, but perfect from, I think he was 10 of 10 throughout the series. And then his first 61 games before the bubble, where he was 18.7 points per game on 53-38-81 shooting. So all that is to say, basically, he had a very consistent season, you know, always hung around the 17 to 19 points per game range throughout the entire year, and took a nice little leap in the bubble, putting up huge performances to start after he had 53 and then 34 and 32 and 39 against LA. So, TJ Warren's best season of his career, I think, by far. If you look at kind of the past, this is his career high in points per game, shooting percentage, not 3-point percentage, but pretty close, and a career high in free throw percentage, and a career, I believe, low in turnovers as well when he played more than 60 games. So TJ Warren had a great season, and so let's talk about his highlights and his lowlights. TJ Warren's high moment, I think I already kind of mentioned it, was 53-point game on August 1st against the Philadelphia 76ers, the most points scored on August 1st in NBA history. I can say that with a definitive fact because it is they only played about 5 games in NBA history on that date. His stat line that night was just remarkable. 20 of 29, including 9 of 12 from 3. Only took 4 free throws. I think he's only the third 50-point performance where you don't take 5 or more free throws. I think he joined like Steph Curry. Maybe Steph Curry in that and somebody else. He entered the bubble on just a ridiculous hot streak. One that was badly needed because the rest of the team, the other 3-point shooters in McDermott and Justin Holiday were not very good. And then you had some injuries with Brogdon, missed a few games here or there and whatnot. And obviously, it's a bonus not playing. He was remarkable in those 6 games. I thought, you know, I probably was a little bit hyperbolic and thought that, he's a totally different player. Although I think what that did show was he definitely became kind of a pull-up three-point shooter, right? I think he didn't really have that game, that kind of skill set in the regular season. I think he kind of should have been working on that, where he could just kind of get the ball, two dribbles, pull up, drain a three if he gave him enough space. I'm interested to see how that translates next season, because I think that's something that he can definitely improve on or continue to build on. Because if he can do that, if he has that kind of pull-up three-point shot at like a consistent pace, it kind of changes his game because it forces defenders to really play him tight, and then it opens up the floor for other players. I mean, defenders already played him tight, but he was not as much of a threat roaming outside the three-point line. One, because he wasn't a high-volume three-point shooter, right? In the bubble, he took 7 per game. Versus his season average was 3.4 last year with Phoenix. He had 4.2. So he wasn't like this, like, you know, 40% three-point shooter on 7 attempts, right? Where that's what he was in the bubble, if not better. And so if he can become that kind of player, one, his points per game will shoot up into obviously the mid-20s. I mean, he's taking 7 threes a game like he did in the bubble and making them at 40%. His points per game go way up at that point. Efficiency goes way up, and it forces teams to really guard him tight. And that'll be difficult for him to have those kind of numbers if teams are really selling out to stop him. But if teams are selling out to stop him, that opens up everything else. And so for him, it's kind of maybe if teams start to do that, I'm not sure they will start the season. I think he had kind of a mediocre playoffs where I don't think it was as bad as I kind of thought on from the eye test. I mean, he averaged 20 points in the 4 games, so he was decent. He played a ton of minutes and was an okay player. He wasn't a great three-point shooter, but if he has a couple, you know, big bubble games, I think he's more poised to have like a 20-plus point start, you know, 20 points a night to start the rest of the season next year, considering just his overall progression. If he does that, then teams are going to be kind of zoning in on him defensively, and it's going to be, he'll have to break that barrier, right? That's the next barrier to break. But, you know, with the other guys in the offense, that should make everything easier for them. That should open up the floor for everybody. If teams are going to sell out on him, it means Sabonis gets more shots, Brogdon, and even Oladipo, if he's still in the roster, get more shots. So it's really good for everybody, frankly. Even if Warren is tampered down because he's such like a threat on points per game, it still opens up everything else. And then the time you do leave him alone, he starts to cook a little bit, and that can be your kind of counterweight to that. His low light, I think it's a pretty obvious one as well. I think it's that Jimmy Butler game he got thrown out. And so, weirdly enough, I did some counting, and so make sure I have it right, but I believe he had 8 games where he had less than 10 points. Only 8 times this season did that happen. That's pretty good considering he played 66 games, something like that. And of course, one of those came against when he got thrown out of the Miami game. Let me go back. Got thrown out of the Miami game on January 8th for obviously tripping Jimmy Butler, getting his face. He had 3 points in that 1-of-5 shooting. I think by far his worst game of the season. You look at it, points per game. You know, he had nights where he didn't have great shooting nights, but one of them came in a 30-point loss to Utah. You know, a loss to the Knicks where I think he might have been a little hurt early in the season against Cleveland when they won. You know, a couple times they'd win when he didn't have a ton of points, but a lot of times it came in like these funky games versus that one. They got kind of blown out ultimately in the game, but when he got thrown out, they had a little bit of a shot, I guess. But it just was a bad look for him. He's not a loud player, I think the right way to put it. He's very like TJ Warren's very like does his thing and leave him alone kind of thing. And him getting in that kind of scuttle with Butler really became to me kind of an issue. And Butler kind of proved to him. I mean, I always for a while said, why is Butler talking so much smack? He hasn't really proved anything yet. But in the playoffs, he did. I mean, Butler went from I think you know a top 15 to 20 player to a top 10 player in the playoffs. We'll see if he continues that. But yeah, I think that was just a bad moment for him. The other low moments, I guess you could, like I said, he didn't have a ton of like terrible moments. I think you go early on in the year when he really, against Detroit, when he just like really botched that end of game 3-point shots, taking 2 really terrible shots at the end of that game, cost them that first. I think it was the third game in Detroit he did that. My bad, not the first one. But it took him a little while to get going. But once he got going, I mean, he was it was a pretty good. It's pretty good for him. I mean, like I said, I mean, he scored 33 points in the 7th game with the Pacers when he played against Charlotte, and from then on, I mean, it was you know consistently night 21, 19, 23, 26, 23, 29. I mean, he was just consistently putting up a ton of points. And if he wasn't putting up a ton of points, like he had a night early on where he had 14 points, it was on 5-of-9 shooting. I mean, he just was a super efficient player. I mean, the Pacers just really hadn't had he to me obviously. You can talk about it all I want is that he got the, you know, he was a free player, basically just took in his salary and gave up nothing for him. So obviously anything he produced was like a plus, but he, to me, this season went from, you know, skeptical starter, maybe the way to put it. I think people thought he was good, but weren't sure what his Phoenix stats meant considering how garbage the team went, to like for sure starter and maybe even like borderline all-star. I mean, especially the way he made the all-bubble team, obviously. And I don't think he necessarily is an all-NBA player. I think we'll see what happens. Can he keep progressing? But I think he's a guy who's going to can put up 20-plus points on a playoff team, like the Pacers were this year, right? He was their leading scorer at 19.8. Even before the bubble, he was averaging 18.7, which I think was the lead or just slightly below Sabonis at that time. So interesting to see, I think, what happens next year. So that is kind of one of my like lingering questions, I guess, is what happens next year when they kind of bring everything back together and hopefully have everybody healthy and maybe don't move a ton of guys and maybe just like a small spot that could also help them if they go a little less double center. So let's talk about that. But first, today's Locked On Pacers podcast is brought to you by our wonderful friends over at BuiltBar.com. I've been talking about them for months now. They are the amazing protein bar that has 18 different flavors, everything from caramel brownie to coconut almond to banana bread. They are a great protein bar that are 100% covered in chocolate and soft and easy to chew. They are low calorie, low sugar, high in protein, and great for somebody that's being healthy conscious or just trying to indulge on a delicious treat. My favorite one, I continue to say, is the peanut butter brownie one that has 19 grams of protein, 180 calories, 5 grams of sugar, and 5 grams of net carbs. This company makes fantastic protein bars, and you should try them today. If you go to BuiltBar.com, use the promo code LOCKEDON, you'll get 20% off your next order. Use the promo code LOCKEDON for 20% off at BuiltBar.com. Today's Locked On Pacers podcast is also brought to you by our friends at Roman. It can be awkward or embarrassing to talk about ED. Usually we just brush it off or blame ourselves, but Roman is here to get you the advice you want and the help you need with no shame. With Roman, you get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. A healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, Roman will ship you the real medicine for free with 2-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward, simple, and discreet. Getting started is simple. Just go to roman.com/lockedon and complete an online visit today. ED used to be tough to talk about, but now there's Roman. Complete an online visit today and connect with a doctor to take care of it. And right now, our listeners can get Roman for $50 off your first month of ED treatment and a free online visit and free 2-day shipping if they go to roman.com/lockedon. That's getroman.com/lockedon. Well, I think I have 4 questions lingering on TJ Warren going forward. So the first one, I kind of teased before the break, and that is, what happens if they finally put him at the 4, right? They unlocked something in the playoffs, right? They found some lineup where they have, where it's Oladipo, where it's Brogdon, where it's somebody, Warren, and the center, right? I don't know if Turner is that center, but it seems like if you're able to move Warren to the 4 and bring in a 2 or a 3, you can make it work. One, offensively, it's a huge success because Warren can exploit that 4 all day, and you have better 1s and 2s. So you just need that kind of third guard, I guess, to go with that. 2, on the defensive end, because of Brogdon's size, because of Oladipo's versatility, you can pretty much guard 2 through 4s, right? Warren can guard a 3 or a 4. Barney go all the way from 1 to 3. Oladipo can do 2s and 3s. So no matter what you bring in as that 1 through 3 spot, you have guys who can guard the bigger players, right? That new 1, 2, or 3 can guard the point guard if he's your worst defender, right? So defensively, it seems like it can work, and it just makes it seems to make it easier, right? So if Warren can, I don't think he's going to be like a 55% three-point shooter the way he was in the bubble, but if he's a 40% three-point shooter, like I said, on a 7-plus attempts, he goes from being kind of a watch-out-for-him player to we have to sell out to stop him type player. Now, I don't think he's going to be that high. I think he'll up his attempts, right? He only took about 3.5 this year. I think he'll get up to, I think, maybe 5 or 6 per game, and maybe he'll make them at like a 38% clip. I'm curious, can he break through kind of the wall, right? There's like little steps when you're a player, right? And that's kind of one of my next questions. But if he's that good of a player and you have to sell on him or really have to play up on him, that makes the game easier for Oladipo, for Brogdon, for Sabonis, for everyone else is out there, right? Because all of a sudden you're now playing, instead of, you know, before when I think Sabonis and Brogdon would maybe be the focus of a defense, or would even be the focus of a defense, he's not. Now they have to play one-on-one across the board. If not, even they try to and then double team that, leaves Warren open, which makes him easier. So like, there's just, they can play each other really well. And that's kind of the next question I had is what trade did the Pacers make, and do they stubbornly say, we want to see Oladipo, Warren, Brogdon with another four or another like two or three or four and Sabonis before we say we're getting rid of him, even if Oladipo is not content to be here, do you want to see what you can produce before then, right? I don't think Oladipo is going to tank the team with, you know, the way I think a Paul George might have or Anthony Davis, but I think if Oladipo is serious about winning, they can bring in a really good three or four to play next to Warren. And I mean, you know, even I can go two, three, or four really and play three guards at most. And I think it can really work, right? I think the four-headed monster of Sabonis, Brogdon, Oladipo, Warren is just can be really good because they all complement each other in different ways, right? So you get Sabonis who can be the off-the-ball screener, so you don't have this clogged up guys just constantly dribbling, playing one-on-one because Sabonis is sitting in action. At the same time, you've got Oladipo, who's got this unreal speed to the rim. If he can get that back, now he didn't quite have that in the bubble, but if he gets that back, this unreal speed where he can, you know, basically beat a defender one-on-one if you give him opportunity, you know, get him downhill if he needs to, even with like a small little pick. You add in that, you've got Brogdon and Warren, who can be sharpshooters outside for Oladipo's kickout passes. And at the same time, then you've got Brogdon, a guy who can kind of use his body to create space. And then you can get Warren, who's really good at cutting to the rim, and Oladipo cutting to the rim, both. All kinds of action going on, right? And all you got to do is use Sabonis as kind of the guy to start the action, and then all three of those guards, I guess call them guards, forwards, whatever you want to call them, can basically score for you, right? And then your bailout is a pick and roll with Sabonis. You get the ball rolling to the rim, and he can put him, you know, sink in a nice little three-foot shot, right? That's just, they all come together really well. I don't know if that means they're going to, like, take off, but I think there's an opportunity where if they, you know, can continue to build the depth, bring in somebody at that three, I think they need to bring in a two or a three. At that spot, they all complement each other, and then you can see the kind of growth, right? And that's where I think Warren, it's kind of my third question for Warren, and that's, does he continue to keep improving, right? So Warren's career stats, you know, he goes from, obviously, rookie year, playing 40 games, averaging 6 points, then second season, 11 points per game, third season, 14.4, and then really broke out in that fourth season with Phoenix, where he had 19.6 points. That's when he got his extension. Then 18 points on kind of a half season with Phoenix, had injury issues, and then came back, played pretty much a full season with the Pacers, 67 of 73 games, and averaged 20 points per game. Pretty much each year, you saw him kind of peak out, I guess, in the last season in Phoenix, but his shooting percentage went up this season. I think that's because he's put in better spots than he was in Phoenix. His three-point percentage didn't get better than it was the previous year in Phoenix, but he was taking more, you know, it did if you take his bubble minutes, and he just, he took more twos, frankly, as a Pacer, and that will probably change no matter who the new coach is. His effective field goal percentage increased pretty much every year since he started becoming a starter right in his third season, right? We're going from 51 to 51 again to 55 to 58 this season. His reboundings have been about the same, right? He's just got to figure out, can he sort of develop a little bit, right? Can he become a passer where if he gets double team, he can kick the ball to the right, make the right move, right? Can he continue to develop on the three-point shooting to become, you know, take 5 or 6 three-point shots, right? I mean, you take his, right now, if he has 15 shots, right? And I'm not sure he'll have last shots next year, right? That seems about right, if you're thinking, right? Basically, what happens is Oladipo somehow slots in, getting some combination of who has replaced him at times shots, right? I mean, you had Lamb for a little bit, then you had Aaron Holiday, then you had Justin Holiday, right? So whoever replaced Oladipo, but you know, get some that person shots, and maybe one or two from everybody else, right? So if he's taking 15 shots and he's taking 7 threes and shooting the same percentage, then all of a sudden now he's averaging more like 21, 22 points. And if you can have, you know, I think players legitimately have a shot at what, three, you know, 18 plus point a game shooters. If you maybe even four, you know, at 18 to 20 range between Brogdon, Warren, Oladipo, and Sabonis, right? And we saw this in that Laker game when all three, Warren, Oladipo, and Brogdon played really well. The team was really good. They beat the Lakers. I mean, now the Lakers played like crap in that game, and Anthony Davis couldn't make a shot if he was trying. But those three guys played exceptionally well, and the team was really, really hard to beat. And that's what you say next year, right? Even if anybody wants out, whatever it is, you say, we're going to run them back. We're going to put them with a more situationally fit center, and we're going to add a better guard, a better fifth option around them, and that's going to make them even better. And that team, we're going to get that team for 60 games. We're going to see what we have, and that team's going to be successful, hopefully. And we're going to use that to, you know, get a top 4 or 5 seed and win a playoff series, and you convince Oladipo that we're here to compete. That's the ideal scenario, I guess, in my mind. I think Warren plays a huge part in that. The last thing with Warren, I guess, is his contract. Now, he has 2 years at about $24 million, right? He makes 11.7 next year and then 12.7 the year after that. He can sign an extension right now. He could probably give him like a 4-year extension at 125% of his last year. So looking at about 15 to 16 a year, I think is roughly what he could get. I don't think he's going to sign for that, because I think if he has some awesome years, wanting to get a much bigger extension too. I think the Pacers maybe don't want to sign him yet. I think part of the thing with Warren is dangling out that money, right? I mean, I think you'll know in the next 2 years whether he's like going to keep improving and become a, you know, he's in his prime right-ish right now, right? He'll be hitting that free agent at 29 years, you know, the prime is 27 to 32, they say, right? So you'll know whether he's like worth as much money as you have to pay him. Now, maybe you fear you're losing, but remember, as the incumbent team, you have the Bird right fifth year raise and stuff like that. The cap by 2022 should be figured out through this pandemic, hopefully, knock on wood. But I think you don't really want to pay him because you want to keep an incentive for him to keep improving, right? I mean, I think with a lot of players, that's a huge motivation, right? I mean, it doesn't matter who it is. I mean, Oladipo's the motivation for him currently, right? Is that you want to incentivize him to really keep improving or get back to level, because he'll get a huge deal, right? As long as you're willing to pay him if they exceed expectations, then you don't have a problem. That's the only issue. If they screw that up, I'm not really sure. But like, for example, if they basically has a great year and they don't pay him the 5-year full max, then it might show some issues or not willing to offer it, whatever. But I think as long as you tell guys, if you do this, we're willing to pay you, which I think they kind of had done in the past with other guys. I mean, the Pacers are willing to pay for talent. And you'll see, right? If in the next 2 years he doesn't do what you want him to do, then you can just cut bait and move on, or even trade him next season. Now, I don't see that happening. I think he's a pretty key piece of this team's next 2, 3, 4 years. But we'll see what happens. I mean, I think the coaching decision will have a huge factor on him. I think he probably enjoyed playing McMillan's system because he got to take a lot of twos and got to take a lot of like floater and kind of interesting. Probably the next coach will not let him do that many. But, you know, a smart coach would find that balance where they want him to shoot more threes, which he started to do in the playoffs, but also understand that he is an elite level player from, you know, 5 to 15 feet or inside 3 feet. You can get him and allow him to take those chances at certain times because he can hit him at a rate where it's efficient, right? He's not just some guy who's just, you know, Russell Westbrook, you're jacking up 18 footers that are not efficient. Or even Miles Turner, for example, he is really an efficient player, you know, inside 15 feet, let's say. So, you know, I think it's pretty obvious in this podcast. I'm a huge TJ Warren fan. I think he has huge potential. I think, I don't know. I don't think he could be. I guess maybe he could be an all-star, right? I think just because I haven't even talked about his defense at all this podcast, but like he is the prototypical small forward, and they basically stole him for free, right, from the Suns. And the Suns, he needed a new place to kind of reach new potential, I think. But I think he has the potential to really develop into like a borderline all-star type player, right? I'm not sure whoever cracked the all-star game, but like he's at the position where like if he can just keep improving, it's the most elastic position. What I mean by that is that like his peak could put him at an all-star level, but also, you know, if he's not very good, it looks even worse because he's compared to these other top small forwards. Where like I think at like center you can only top up so much as so much impact. You know, you can have the most impact if you're a dominant 3 or 4. That's where you have the most impact. That is the most valuable position in the league. And so if he can keep improving, the sky might be the limit, and he might be looking at a max contract in 2 seasons. You know, could he become a Tobias Harris level type player? Not this year Tobias, but you know, pre Philly Tobias, that kind of player. I mean, I don't know. I think he might be able to. He's got to, you know, shoot more threes, but I think he has that a possibility. And he keeps improving, right? Each year, he keeps improving. And we'll see what a new coach does to unlock even more of his game. Because I think he is the low-key kind of key cog in the Pacers maybe being a playoff team to a contender. Because if he makes a little bit of a leap and everybody gets back to where they were pre-injuries with Sabonis and with Oladipo even close, 90% of there, then you're talking about a team that has a shot, right? We will be very competitive in the playoffs, and that's all you can really hope for in this league. As always, you can follow the Locked On Pacers podcast at Locked On Pacers. We'll bring you another podcast this week. I don't know if I'm going to record it for Thursday or Friday, but we'll bring you one more show talking about some kind of random news topic. We'll see what happens. Pacers should hire a coach sometime soon. They are now able to hire, or not hire, but able to, well, they are able to hire, but able to interview the Miami Heat assistants who have been in the bubble. So we'll see if they talk to those guys this week. Latest was some rumor with somebody tweeting that Dave Yeager did not have a good interview, thank God. So we'll see what happens there. But hopefully that happens next week or two, and we'll bring you a bunch of coverage of that once that happens. That is all for Locked On Pacers podcast. As always, have a great rest of your day.